From the KLYT broadcast studio, this is ABQ Connect. Your input on today's topic is important to us. Join in the conversation by calling 505-338-5790 or text 505-585-LIVE. ABQ Connect.
Well, it's going to be one of those days where I really appreciate our engineer, Jared, who's here daily to push all the buttons and turn up the volumes and do all what he does to make a sound good during the show. Jared's out, and here I am sitting in the engineer's seat, looking through a few panes of glass to another studio where our guest, Ray Mondragon, has made himself comfortable, kind of in the driver's seat over there where I usually sit. Ray, how does that feel?
Well, it feels good. I think you might get fired.
You know what? I was looking for a job when I found this one, but I'm very happy to be here. I love doing what I do, and part of that is reaching out to various organizations around the city and the state, and really around the country and world, to be a megaphone in this community, to the Christian community, and the entire community, but our programming being Christian, typically we got a lot of the Christian audience dialed in. And hopefully you were able to get a heads up that Ray was going to be on the air. It's always a great opportunity to invite someone to tune in who you've had these discussions with about creation. And now, Ray, you are part of the Creation Science Fellowship of New Mexico that meets every Tuesday night at 7 o'clock at Faith Church on Central.
Third Tuesday of the month.
Third Tuesday.
You got the location correct.
Okay, the third Tuesday of the month, and always, I'm going to guess, some great discussion there, Ray. What's a typical
usually
night?
Usually we have a talker or a speaker that gives a good talk, and usually related to creation science, and then there's always a question and answer session afterwards, an informal time that you can interact with other people that are also interested in creation science. So it's a good time of fellowship.
Now, Ray and I usually do this the second Wednesday, second Wednesday of the month.
Usually.
And Ray is, he's going to be traveling. He's going to be a globetrotter next month. Although it'll be the third Wednesday, we do plan to do this again on the 17th of May. Ray, do you mind letting the folks know? And actually, we talked before the show, you know, if someone's got all their ducks in a row, this may interest them.
Well, I should have announced it several months ago, but I'm taking a group to Israel, and I've got plenty of room to add, even though short notice. First 2 weeks in May, we'll be there, actually 2.5 weeks, and looking forward to a good time.
So if someone knows that, yeah, I can do that. You know, drop of a hat, I'm there. What would you encourage them to do to be a part of that trip?
They could call me direct, 505-268-6938, or drop me an email.
Okay, and that is
raym@swcp.com. And I'm assuming they could call you and you'd give them all the information.
Yeah, I would. But several times during the show, we'll give out that information, remind people about that trip to Israel. And if it's of interest to them, they can reach out to you. Maybe you'll add a couple folks to your trip.
Yep. And I don't know anybody that does it cheaper. So,
yeah. Well, I'll tell you what.
Money's an issue.
I went years ago, probably about, at least a decade ago. And I was real, real blessed to be able to go. To be honest with you, I wanted to go on the trip, and with growing kids, it was, not something I could budget for, quite honestly. And I was a little bummed. And, there was a peace in my heart when I realized, you know what? If I don't go right now, I'm going to go after the whole place is remodeled anyway.
That's right.
So, my mom wanted to go. And dad didn't, and she said, I'd really like to go. If I paid your way, would you go? And I'm telling everybody, mom ponied up, and I didn't have to think about it much. I was like, yeah, I'll go. It really
What's a trip of a lifetime? And it's something that I think a Christian, when they come back, the Bible just comes alive because you have these visual pictures in your mind of the specific locations that are mentioned in the Bible.
Yeah, and you know, it's no secret. I attend Calvary Church. Calvary Church is absolutely a friend to Israel. And these trips are good for the economy in Israel. It is a, you know, it is doing something good for Israel. You know, you hear different things. You know, people have spiritual awakenings or spiritual strengthening. And, you know, what I got most from it, Ray, was when we read about something in the Bible and it cites that you can be absolutely confirmed. I mean, our Megiddo is Megiddo.
Yep.
And to be able to see and then to be able to envision those things. One of the first things I remember was hearing a teaching from Chuck Smith. He was talking about the division of the land amongst the tribes. And whether it was the right way to be thinking about it or not, I thought, man, if I got that land up near the Dead Sea, I would not be happy. I want that. I want that up at the headwaters of the Jordan River, up just below Lebanon. In the forest, in the trees, in the clear water. It's just beautiful up there. And it's just a beautiful country. So we are going to get into our conversation that we've had over the past several months. But let me put a bow on the Israel discussion. Ray's going to Israel for the first couple of weeks in May. Still has some opening on the trip. If you've got your ducks in a row and it interests you, you can call him directly, 505-268-6938. Probably wait until after 2 o'clock today.
That'd be good
because we're going to be on the show. Or you can email anytime, Ray M. That's RAYM at SWCP.com. All right, Ray.
In fact, I would take questions on our discussion as well if people are interested in carrying a further discussion and didn't want to be on the radio.
Well, and I will say this because I'm on the air and engineering. I may have a difficult time answering the phone. However, you can text questions, and I'll pass them along. All right. You can text 585-LIVE. That's 505-585-LIVE. Do you have a question about, Israel, as we're going through the curriculum, right?
Right. Absolutely.
If we're talking about something on creation science, you have a question, feel free to text 505-585-LIVE. Live, and we'll take that call. Okay, so Ray, let's jump there we go. Our first segment's almost done. Yeah. let's jump into our introduction for today.
Well, I just want to remind your audience that last time we were talking about science relating to the Genesis flood. In the prior discussions, I tried to make the point that it's very difficult to get around the account in the book of Genesis, get around the idea that this is a universal or worldwide flood. You have to really jump through hoops to fit any other interpretation in that, even though, as we've said all along, the major view of the church is that the Genesis flood was a local flood. And the reason for that is most people, most theologians, are intimidated by the scientific community that claims that there's no evidence in the geological column for a universal or worldwide flood. So we wanted to address that in some detail, and we started with that last time. And I gave the most recent creation science theory concerning the origin of the flood, how it all came about, and it's in line with the description that we have in Genesis chapter 7 in verse 11 when it describes after a specific date there. It says, on the same day, all the fountains of the great deep burst open, and the floodgates of the sky were opened. So there are two things that are referenced there. And several years ago, it's I think over 20 now, that John Baumgartner looked at those phrases and he looked at what you can observe in Geology Today, and he's a geophysicist, so he knew what he was looking at. And he put the two together and came up with what is known today as the Baumgartner flood model that is a little bit different than all of the theories that we had before, most concentrated on the rain. But as I explained last time, the Baumgartner flood model is more of a tectonic catastrophe, and the rain event is secondary and comes as a result of the cataclysm of the movement of tectonic plates.
I wonder, would that have made the water warm?
Well, it did make it slightly warmer, and there's also another theory that goes along with it concerning the origin of the Ice Age. Now, I don't want to get off on that tangent, but warmer water produces conditions that other creation scientists have observed that if you have these conditions, you can have a runaway ice age, and it would explain the historical event of an ice age that we still see the remnants of even in our day today.
Right, including that ice bridge separating, what is it, Kamchatka and Alaska?
Right, yeah. The
Russia, Alaska, whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. So does that complete our review, or is there more to review?
Well, I think your audience ought to have a little detail to it.
All right.
I don't know if you want to do it now or if you want to take a break. And
No, we got a few minutes. Let's do it.
Okay. Well, John Baumgartner observed the mid-Atlantic Ridge, which is a volcanic range. It's a mountain range. It's under the water, so you don't see it. So it was unknown until it was discovered around World War II when submarines were taking soundings. But they discovered that this mid-Atlantic ridge is like a zipper that runs from essentially pole to pole. And Baumgartner thought, well, what could have formed that? And is there any relationship with the Genesis flood? And in his flood model, he has a finite element three-dimensional model that he composed that took all of the capability of Los Alamos National Labs computers at the time.
Which would be in your phone now, probably.
Pardon me?
Would that all that technology be in your phone now?
Probably. So, and he recognized that geophysicists made some observations that they recognized that at a very, very slow rate, the continents across the Atlantic are actually moving apart. So this model, actually putting in the right parameters, says that if you have certain things in place, you could have a rapid runaway tectonic event that separated the North and South American continents with the European and the African continents.
So possibly at one time, just one
landmass.
Mega, yeah.
Yeah, Pangaea is what some people have described. And in fact, that seems to be what is described in day three when God separated the waters from the landmass.
That seems like a long time since I've seen that, but can you almost take those landmasses that are seen now and if you were to be able to move them on a sphere,
absolutely,
see how they would...
They would mesh.
Yeah.
They would mesh. And it makes sense. And part of the flood model is that when these plates at a very rapid rate separated, it also exposed the mantle with hot lava-like rock to the bottom of the Atlantic Ocean, or the ocean waters that existed at the time. There was no Atlantic Ocean. But when that happened, it exposed hot rock to water and produced this explosive jets of water that would shoot up into the atmosphere from the bottom of the Atlantic all the way to the atmosphere. And that is what produced
the fountains.
40 days and 40 nights of rain. So that was a secondary result of the tectonic movement that opened up the bottom area there and exposed it to molten hot mantle rock.
Boy, wouldn't you like to have a video of that?
Well, that would be amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. It'd be much, much more than the CG guys in Hollywood have been able to do.
Yep. And also as a result of these massive movements, you would have these mega tsunamis. They would overtake all of the landmass that existed and that was separated and destroy everything on the surface. In fact, rip up large quantities of material, including entire forests. And the biblical text seems to at least hint that the vegetation on the earth was far more lush than it is today.
Ray, have we covered, and let's wait for it if this isn't the place, but talking about that destruction and all, have we talked about marine life? I mean, is it just common sense? Well, they didn't need to be on the ark.
Well, no, it didn't need to be on the ark.
Right.
In fact, the creatures and the oceans did not need to be on the ark. It's only primarily land, air-breathing animals
right.
that are described in the Genesis account. But, yeah, we could talk about that. I think we mentioned it in passing, but didn't make a point of it.
You know, it's common sense. It is. But you know, when we go back to what kind of destruction? Everything.
Right.
You know, I wasn't sure.
But the text is specific. And it in the descriptions, it talks about the beasts of the field and right. creeping creatures. And it doesn't mention the sea creatures.
Right.
So we assume that they were not included.
Okay.
So that's the Baumgartner flood model. And as a result of the Genesis flood, not only do we see the mid-Atlantic range that is there, and geophysicists know about it, and the best explanation is as a result of what was going on during the Genesis flood, but there's all kinds of other evidence that I'd like to discuss.
All right. Well, we will get to that. We are up against the break now. Good timing, Ray, and walking us through the Baumgartner flood model. If you just tuned in, Ray Mondragon is our guest today with Creation Science Fellowship of New Mexico. And want to mention it real quick. At the beginning of the show, Ray mentioned he's going to be taking a trip to Israel in the first couple of weeks of May. And we could have mentioned it a couple months ago. We didn't, but we're mentioning it now. Who knows who might be listening, who's got all the ducks in a row, are interested in a trip to Israel with Ray and a group, a relatively small group, Ray?
One busload.
Okay. And if that interests you at all, we're going to continue to give you Ray's contact. You can call him directly on his phone, although please wait until after today's show, after 2 p.m. Area 505-268-6938. Or you can email Ray M. That's RAYM at SWCP.com. All right, we'll come back with more on ABQ Connect.
On KLYT, this is ABQ Connect. There's still time to join the conversation by calling 505-338-5790 or text 505-585-LIVE, ABQ Connect.
Yeah, you can do that. We're not going to take calls because I'm actually engineering the show where Jared would normally be answering the phone. And I can't be on the phone and on the air at the same time. Well, without just kind of plopping people on the air without screening calls. So, we will, take your text though. If you have a question about today's conversation, 505-585-LIVE. If you've got a question, we would, love to, address that on the air with Ray Mondragon of Creation Science Fellowship of New Mexico. And I'm not going to give the information right now, but we mentioned a couple times already, Ray's taking a trip to Israel. First couple of weeks in May. If you've already got your ducks in a row, your passport and whatever monetary things you'd need to get a ticket to go on the trip, at the end of this segment, before we go to a break, I'll give you the contact information there. Now we've hopefully got you sticking around for some great conversation on creation. All right, Ray, let's pick it up.
Well, I gave a little bit of a review of what we looked at last time. And if you could envision all of the elements of the Baumgartner flood model, then you would expect that there would be massive amounts of evidence that you can observe even today. And what I've been announcing in our past sessions, there actually is overwhelming scientific evidence that supports a worldwide flood.
Now, Ray, earlier in the show, you said there's people who jump through hoops to disprove that. And my question in hearing that is, why? Why would you, why?
Well, because the scientific community is well respected, and rightfully so. So if science speaks, a lot of people say, well, if it's scientific, I don't want to sound dumb and I don't want to sound uninformed and don't have everything in order here. So most theologians are not trained in the sciences. Most theologians only have theological and other backgrounds, so they're intimidated by what the scientists might say. And they emphatically say that there is no evidence of a universal flood in the geological column. The problem is not with the data. The problem is not with the column itself. In other words, there are layers. They actually exist everywhere on the face of the earth. The issue is what is the proper way of interpreting that data? And the Baumgartner model, along with creation scientists, we look at the same data, the same layers, and see that that is evidence. The entire geological column down to what's called the Cambrian layer, that is the bottom of the sedimentary rock layers. Everything above, including the Cambrian, are sedimentary rock layers. Below that is basement rock. So we as creation scientists would say that that basement rock represents rock that was created on day three that we have in Genesis chapter one. And everything above that, so from the Precambrian to the surface, would have been laid down, and all geophysicists would agree it would be laid down. Some of them would hold to a wind theory over billions of years. But most of them would believe that it's laid down by water. And we as creation scientists, based on Baumgartner's research, say that it makes sense that all of those layers were laid down by one event, not many layers of many floods or many long ages of accumulation of sediment, but one massive geological upheaval called the Genesis flood.
I was going to say, as far as it being created, and that process was fairly quick because it was day three.
That's right.
24 hours.
But day three, all of that surface would have been destroyed by the tectonic movements and the water action of the mega tsunamis. Mm-hmm. They would have ripped up all of the surface. And then as those waters would slow down, they would, obviously, the material would settle out and they would produce the layering. So the layering, and if you go to the Grand Canyon, you can see the difference between basement rock and all of the layers above. It's called the Great Unconformity.
Okay, and are the sandias not thick enough to see that?
No. Well, the Great Unconformity, you can see it on the crest there. In fact, the crest is one of the layers. Geologists call it the Pennsylvanian layer. And below that, the granite, that would be basement rock. The jagged, unlayered rock, that's basement rock. So the difference between, or the line between, the Pennsylvanian or the crest and that below, that differentiation would be the Great Unconformity. So you can see it right outside your Albuquerque window here.
Yeah, the big rock part of the crest is the basement rock.
Well, everything below the crest, okay. Below the layered rock,
that
would be the Great Unconformity. Now, there was a geological event after the Genesis flood that uplifted the crest. But if you drill down below Albuquerque, in other words, right in the city, eventually, about, over probably a mile or so, you will encounter the same rock layer with the same fossils as what you see on the crest. So there was a lot of geological upheaval after the Genesis flood, after the layers were laid down. And this is true all over the world. And geophysicists are beginning to recognize this. And some of it is a result of John Baumgartner's work, that they're taking more of a catastrophic view to Earth history rather than the uniformitarian viewpoint.
Yeah, I have to wonder. I know it's recent and the research probably isn't there yet, but just to have seen what happened in Turkey this year, you have to wonder how much of that even supports some of the, you know, the things we're talking about.
Well, earthquakes are as a result of movements of two different plates, one against the other. The most famous is the San Andreas Fault.
Mm-hmm.
But earthquakes all over the world are as a result of movements of plates against one another, and they produce these massive destructive waves that show up in the destruction on the surface. But that would have happened on a massive scale before and during the Genesis flood.
Well, Ray, believe it or not, we're already up against another break, and we're going to take a quick break. But before we do, I do want to remind people about that trip to Israel coming up the first couple of weeks of May. Again, if you've got all your ducks in a row and, you know, your passport, the finances you need to be part of a trip like that, and someone to watch the dog, whatever it might take.
Yep.
If it interests you, Ray would be happy to hear from you. And here's what you do. Just call him directly after 2 o'clock today, because he's on the show right now. But I'll give you an email as well. Here's his phone number, 505-268-6938. Or you can email Ray M. That's RAYM at SWCP.com. We'll be back with more with Ray Mondragon of Creation Science Fellowship of New Mexico right after the break on ABQ Connect.
On KLYT, this is ABQ Connect. There's still time to join the conversation by calling 505-338-5790 or text 505-585-LIVE.
All right. Hey, we're not taking phone calls today. I am engineering the show from where Jared usually sits, so it can't be screening phone calls and hosting the show. But what we can do is take your text. If you've got a phone, you can just text whatever question you have for Ray about our conversation or the trip to Israel we mentioned, which will give you contact information about that for the first couple of weeks in May. If you're prepared to go, make a quick decision on that, you may be headed to Israel. We'll give you that at the end of this segment. But you can text 505-585-LIVE to participate in today's show. If you just tuned in, Ray Mondragon is our guest from the Creation Science Fellowship of New Mexico, which meets on the second Tuesday of each month at 7 p.m. at Faith Church on Central. That's Central and Moon, right, Ray?
That's correct.
And if you just tuned in early in the show, we talked about the issue of historical geology versus the Genesis flood and the evidence supporting the Genesis flood, and also talked about the Baumgartner flood model. And if that interests you, this show will be archived at abqconnect.online, and Ray archives it as well. Ray, where will they find it?
Well, my website is for His Glory, nm.com.
All right. And right now, we're going to walk through the evidence for the flood. And our first step is paleontology, Ray.
Well, as I mentioned, there is overwhelming scientific evidence that supports a worldwide flood. The matter is, how do you interpret the geological column? So all of these layers, in fact, every secular geologist will tell you, how do you determine the layers? You determine the layers by what fossils are contained in those layers.
This would be this would be similar, wouldn't it, to an archaeologist who finds pottery.
Yes.
And determines
a time frame based right. on the pottery.
Right.
So also the geologist will identify the fossils that are predominant, and there are some that they consider index fossils, and they identify a layer. So if they do some drilling, no matter where they are on the face of the earth, they evaluate what fossils, and based on that, they determine whether this is Jurassic. I use that because people are familiar with the movie.
Right, right.
Or the Pennsylvanian that we've referred to earlier, or Cambrian, we also mentioned as well. They have particular fossils that identify them. Well, you ask the question, well, if these layers have all of these fossils, that's the whole area of paleontology. In fact, I did a seminar for homeschoolers. Oh, I don't know. It's been 20 years now. And there was an 8-year-old girl, very sharp. And I started to give the evidence for the Genesis flood. And I mentioned paleontology. So right. I had to define it. And after I defined it, she said, well, why don't they just call it fossilology? Why do they have to use this strange word? So the rest of the seminar, we called it fossilology.
I do have a quick question, Ray. Let me mirror back to you what I'm hearing. Based on the fossils they're finding, they can tell you what layer that they are in.
Yes.
Okay. And would someone who's trying to disprove a global Genesis flood argue that fact, or is that something that's generally accepted amongst Bible-believing scientists and those that would believe contrary?
Yes, we would. We accept the data. We accept what is there. But we accept the layers. We accept that there are fossils in there.
All of those scientists.
Yeah, we accept that. The thing that we dispute is the interpretation. In other words, how did those layers come about?
Right, right. Okay. But they'll all agree that fossil is from that layer.
Right.
Okay.
In fact, we as creation scientists have very little conflict with geology in general.
Yeah.
What we have a conflict with is what the branch of geology that tries to trace Earth history. Now, we're getting into the past,
right.
And we're dealing with issues that no one was there to observe. So in those issues, that's historical geology.
Unless you're at Mount St. Helens.
Well, then, exactly. So historical geology is where we have, as creation scientists, a problem. And the traditional interpretation is all of those layers were laid down over millions and millions of years, accumulating to billions. And we say that that actually there's a better interpretation. And in fact, if you look at the details, and that's what I'm going to try to get into, the details actually point more to a Genesis 1 event flood rather than millions and millions of years of accumulated sediment. And one of the areas is this area of paleontology. So it's the study of fossils.
Right.
So the first question you want to even ask a secular geologist, you want to ask him, are fossils very common, and are fossils being formed today? And your audience, if they think about it, you have to think, well, I don't observe fossils being formed today. In fact, what happens to a creature when it dies? It either is eaten up by predators and or it decays and goes back to a molecular state, you might say.
Mm-hmm.
So fossils are not even formed unless you have very particular and usually catastrophic conditions. So the historical geologist has to explain why you find all of these fossils in all of these layers, and there's an abundance of them. In fact, one of the things that people like to do is go up to the crest and look for fossils. They're up in that Pennsylvania layer. Well, fossils require catastrophic or at least particular conditions in order to form. They don't form commonly. So every one of those layers were laid down not gradually over long periods of time, or there wouldn't be any fossils in them. So they're catastrophic by nature. They produce these fossils.
Hey, Ray, since you mentioned it, for someone going up there looking for fossils, is there a particular place up there, within 50 yards of the edge of the crest or deeper in the woods? Is there any place you'd say, this is what you're looking for if you're looking for fossils?
Just about everywhere. Probably places where a lot of people have been walking. They've picked up those that are easily accessible. But just about any area that you have the layers exposed.
Okay.
Yeah. And I don't know of a particular place, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
So the first argument is just the existence of fossils themselves. And every historical geologist, because they identify the layers, recognize that every single layer has these different fossils, and they're all over the world. If they're all over the world, then that's one indicator that maybe there was a worldwide event. Okay. Another area of paleontology that all historical geologists are aware of, there seem to be the accumulation of various fossils that seem to all have died together in the same event.
Mm.
That is called a fossil graveyard. The La Brea pits in Southern California, there are several fossils that you can find of different creatures, and they appear to all have been swept together, all buried together, all fossilized together. That's a fossil graveyard. Now, that's not unique. They occur all over. In fact, people have heard of the mammoths in Siberia.
Well,
it's not only mammoths. It's several other creatures and even lots of plant life. All of that died and was fossilized together.
Was there any evidence of that near Clayton, New Mexico?
Yes. Yeah. In fact, there are fossil graveyards in New Mexico, Alaska, Germany, Argentina, Wyoming, Utah, Colorado. I mentioned California and other places as well. But there's some major ones in these locations. In fact, the one in Utah is that Dinosaur National Monument, where it's a fossil graveyard of dinosaurs, and they all were gathered together. What could gather animals together except a massive amount of water and then depositing material over them such that they become fossilized? So the existence of fossil graveyards.
So that, we live here in New Mexico. Imagine, for those who've seen the power of water in the arroyos, and they sweep up whatever's there.
That's right.
And at the end, there's a big deposit of stuff. And in this case, it was animals.
Yep. Yep. And then pressurized, because you have these layers on top of layers that would produce these fossils. So the second area of evidence is the abundance of fossil graveyards all over the world argues for some worldwide catastrophic event that could account for all of them. There's also peculiar fossils, at least they seem very unusual to us at least, but they're fairly common and they occur all over the world. They're called polystrate fossils. And those of you that have any geological background probably can figure out what a polystrate fossil might be. Polystrata, many strata. In other words, a fossil that goes through many layers. And remember, the historical geologist says each layer, some of them 40 million years, some of them longer, some of them not so long, laid down over these long periods of time. Well, here you have one fossil many of them are trees that'll go through 3, 4, 5, 6 different layers. The same tree with the same diameter of trunk, except, you know, diminishing as it goes up.
Right.
Going through several layers. Well, the question you have to ask the historical geologist, is this tree billions of years old, millions of years old? And did it not grow? Or does it make more sense that these layers were laid down successively and you have one tree that was encapsulated by these layers
a catastrophic event in a short period of time?
Absolutely.
Would be
the best explanation.
Right. Right.
So these are the types of details that point to one event, one worldwide event, rather than a series of long millions of year of aging.
So that is paleontology, number one of a list of things that are science evidence for a worldwide flood, evidence for the flood. And we are going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we will do what we can to get through. If we don't get through the end of our notes today, we'll pick it up on May 17th when Ray is back in studio, God willing. He'll be back from Israel at that time. And again, if you're interested in finding out about Ray's trip to Israel, that's happening in the first couple of weeks of May. I know that's real quick. But maybe you're ready. Maybe you've got the passport, the means to do it, and it's something that interests you. Just one bus, which I really like the idea of a trip that size, Ray. People can call Ray directly, 505-268-6938, or email raym@swcp.com. We'll be back with more with Ray Mondragon of Creation Science Fellowship of New Mexico right after this on ABQ Connect.
On KLYT, this is ABQ Connect. There's still time to join the conversation by calling 505-338-5790 or text 505-585-LIVE, ABQ Connect.
All right, our last segment with Ray Mondragon to finish up today's show. Ray with the Creation Science Fellowship in New Mexico. They meet the second Tuesday of each month at Faith Church on Central. That's Central and Moon. And Ray, everyone's welcome.
Absolutely. And we love young people.
All right. Well, let's press on through as much as we can. In our last segment, we talked about science evidence for worldwide flood and touched on paleontology. What's next?
Well, we also touched on geophysics in general, and particularly plate tectonics. And when it comes to paleontology, just to kind of wrap it up and then move forward, evolutionists recognize what we were just discussing. For example, a W.M. Miller says comparatively few remains of organisms now inhabiting the earth are being deposited under the conditions favorable for their preservation as fossils. It is nevertheless remarkable that so vast a number of fossils are embedded in the rocks. So they recognize that it takes particular special conditions. So that's fossils. Now there's another kind of fossil, you might say, but this gets into a whole area of study. We could call it coal petrology, the science of coal petrology. Petrology is the study of different types of rocks, kinds of rocks. So they classify coal as a particular kind of rock. Now, every geologist will tell you that coal are the fossilized remains of plant life. And the traditional secular viewpoint is that coal was formed as a result of the accumulation of plant life in peat bogs that eventually formed into coal. Well, there's very little evidence of that. In fact, a better explanation is the Baumgartner model of large amounts of even forests being ripped up, transported, and then that entire forest
being deposited,
yeah. And then other rock layers deposited above it, compressing it into coal.
Catastrophic.
catastrophic. And some of the coal beds are a mile thick. Some coal beds are quite extensive, indicating large forests, large amount of material.
Yeah, I don't feel like I was far off with the arroyos. It's like a small model
of what
the worldwide flood, you know, what would have occurred.
A microscopic model.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So just the existence of coal, and there's a lot of research within that study that indicate that you have more catastrophic events. For just one example of that is you have a certain aligning of the materials that make up the coal that indicate that that there was a movement of all of the material in particular directions, if that describes kind of the idea of the alignment of the material.
Mm-hmm.
And there's other little details in coal that are better explained with one catastrophic event, not just the size of the coal beds, but these are all over the world as well.
Okay, we got about 4 minutes, Ray.
Okay. Similarly, we could talk about petrophysics. That's the whole study of oil and oil deposits. Now, if coal are the fossilized remains of plant life, oil are the, not fossilized, but the accumulation of primarily animal material that has been accumulated. So you have these large amounts of deposits. Well, the secular geologist really doesn't have a very good explanation of where did these coal deposits come from and what produced them. But the same flood model gives evidence that if you have one catastrophic event, you can have the same kind of accumulation of animals that rather than fossilizing them, squeezed out essentially all of the material that produces the oil beds. So those are two areas also. So different sciences. We've talked about paleontology, plate tectonics, geophysics, and coal petrology and petrophysics. And if we had more time, we could even get into sedimentation. There's evidence from sedimentation or geology itself.
And you know, on the 17th, when we come back on May 17th, we'll back up a little bit and review a little bit and maybe go into a little more detail if you'd like.
Yeah, we'll deal with sedimentation in general because there's a lot there that gives evidence
for
universal.
Well, let's do that. I do want to make sure one more time to remind people about, Ray, your trip to Israel. First couple of weeks in May, still room on the trip. And if you have things, and that sounds real quick. I mean, that's just a couple weeks away.
Yep.
But if you have everything in order, your passport and whatever financial means and things you need to do before you go on a trip like that, well, call Ray. Find out. You don't know until you call. So 505-268-6938. Here's that phone number again. 505-268-6938. And Ray's email is raym@swcp.com. Ray, thanks so much for coming. I always enjoy this. This is great. Great education.
Well, I always appreciate coming in. And by the way, people can call if they want to talk about the Genesis flood or creation science.
There you go.
Well.
All right. And we'll do this again with Ray. May 17th is on the calendar. And join us tomorrow on ABQ Connect. Every weekday at 1 o'clock after the, well, actually right now, after the show, stick around. Jay Sekulow is on the way and we appreciate, actually, I also want to say how much I appreciate our engineer, Jared, who's, on his way to vacation. I engineered today's show and hosted. So a little different for me, but, sure makes me appreciate that guy. I always do when he's around as well. Thanks for tuning in and join us tomorrow on the 1 o'clock hour on ABQ Connect.
ABQ Connect is a production of KLYT. The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of KLYT.